How's it going? And welcome to episode 247 of On the Wire, a proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I am Adam Howe, joined as always by Kevin Hastings. Kevin, we always do this remotely, but we are doing this slightly different remotely. I am still at home in Indianapolis before flying off to Boston for the weekend, but you have already done plenty of traveling for the both of us. Tell everybody where you are now.
Well, right now I am in Las Vegas, Nevada for the NFBC main event, and that's the draft I'm going to do. I'm also going to do the Bubba and the Bloom 12-team standalone league on Sunday, and that'll be a lot of fun. But yeah, I'm here in Vegas, and things are really getting kicked off today. I got in yesterday. A lot of people started showing up last night. And some people had already been doing drafts here. There were a couple earlier in the week, but they really got hot and heavy today and tomorrow. And yeah, I'm in that 11 a.m. local time main event. I think 10 leagues going off at once, at least 8, if not 10.
It's
going to be a blast.
Where is it this year? Because I know the Mirage is not a thing anymore.
Yeah, we're at the Rio, so we're off the strip a little bit. But yeah, it's been awesome.
That's cool.
And as I was telling you off air, basketball has been treating me pretty well so far this weekend. We'll see how this goes.
That tends to be the case in my limited action in Vegas during this event. There's more than just fantasy baseball drafts happening, for sure.
The amazing thing, like my favorite thing so far, I know that I can see you and nobody else can see this because we're not on video, but our name tags are baseball cards.
Awesome.
And I just found that so cool.
Yeah,
and I mean, if anybody probably cost them like 12 cents to do that, but it's amazing.
If you're listening to this, go back in YouTube, you'll check it out. We, you know, the podcast does get published on the Pitcherless YouTube channel as well, but it's classic. It's a classic design too. It's like the 88, was it Tops, the wood stain frame. Everybody that's listening to this has that set because everybody has that set from 1987, 88. Cool. Well, I know.
Yeah, I think it's that might be the Bonds rookie card year, actually.
There you go. Yeah. I like too. I saw it, but it has like the former the previous champion label on it, kind of like the rated rookies or like the rookie would have on there. Like if you had an all-star, you got the little banner on there. So they went all out.
You had an amazing idea, and all the NFBC guys are so busy this weekend. Oh, but if I run into them after things are done in an evening and they're relaxing a little bit, that idea you had of the NFBC results being the stats on the back of the card, that's an amazing idea. I don't know how much work that would be for them, but I love that.
Right. Cause I went, where did they even get the picture from? Did you send them the picture?
As we walked in to check in that we were here, they took your picture and they were done in like an hour.
Oh shoot.
Okay. I feel like every little league in the nation should have whatever machine they just used to do that. Like seriously, when I get back home, I am going to contact whoever is in charge of the little leagues and offer to buy them that machine. So every kid playing little league can get a card of themselves.
Really should.
Because it took an hour and it was ready.
That was pretty cool. Cool. All right. Well, it's a whole wild ride out there in Vegas, and that's my forcing of a segue into what we're going to be talking about today. If you didn't realize, we have Fab on Sunday. Yeah. You know, there's still lots of drafts happening, and the season doesn't kick off until Wednesday, but that means Fab starts today. And there's a lot of intricate rules of depending on what the format that you play in. I reminded everybody in the PL Discord earlier today that, you know, FBC has a very intricate rule about players that have not made their MLB debut this season being eligible to be picked up in Fab.
Or and it's not just rookies. Mm-hmm. It's anyone.
Jared Jones of the world.
Not on the roster. Yeah.
Yeah, Jared Jones of the world. Anybody who's basically anybody starts on the DL or on the IL that was not drafted, you can still pick them up this week in Fab. But if they're still not picked up after this Sunday, you won't be able to pick them up until they make their debut. This is an NFBC rule. I'm sure it's different in your Yahoo and your Fantrax and all your other leagues as well, but keep an eye on your format's rules when it comes to who you can pick up and when you can pick them up. And if you are in the NFBC and you have some flexibility to stash, this is the time to do it, because you can always pick them up, drop them next week, and then they become available. Because they were drafted or picked up in the first week of Fab and then dropped. Those players, even if they haven't made their debut, they would be in the pool.
That's when the notebook comes in handy. Yes. Jot all those down, not just the one you did. Make sure you're jotting all those down that anyone else in your league did, so that you're aware if things start to look like, try to get them a week or two ahead when they're a couple bucks, not $130.
So, Kevin, these wild cards that we always talk about throughout the season, almost always it's prospects or what have you, but ultimately they're stashes. How many stashes are you allowing yourself to have by opening day? So after this Sunday, how many stashes, guys you don't plan on dropping right away, are you allowing yourself to have to start the season?
One, with the exception, if I drafted Zach Wheeler, things are looking better and better every day, so I wouldn't so much consider him a stash anymore.
Yeah, sure.
So then I would go another one, even though he's probably not going to be there opening day. But other than that one.
Sure. So, I mean, this is
we don't have a lot of spots.
Especially in the NFBC with only those seven bench spots. Yeah, of course. Yeah. But if you drafted Carlos Rodon, that's a stash. If you drafted somebody if you drafted Connor Griffin, we'll get to him in a little bit, and he doesn't make the opening day roster, he becomes a stash because you don't know when. But your Wheeler example is a good one just because we are pretty confident. We know he's going to start on the IL, but we're pretty confident he's going to come. When is it not a stash? If you think somebody's going to come up before the end of April, is that not a stash, or does it have to be 2 weeks into the season?
It's not just timing for me. It's the quality that I think I'm going to get. That's why Zach Wheeler obviously is a good example. I will not consider him a stash if I think I'm going to get him in April. But the lower and lower you go down in the tiers, then that timing needs to be 3 weeks, 2 weeks, 1 week to I'm not considering them at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does it matter if you're in a 12 teamer or a 15 teamer, whether or not you'd increase that number of stashes or you'd hold on to your stashes longer in one of those formats?
That is a great question. I'm not sure I've considered enough, but I think off the top of my head in a 12, I could go another stash. Just because we're going to be, it's a give and take, right? Because you're going to be turning a few players every week in a 12 typically. Mm-hmm. So you need your spots, but at the same time, the replacement level on guys you can find is going to be better just by sheer numbers. So I would still lean that in a 12, I might make one more stash. The opposite side of that is in a 15, that stash, if they work out, is going to be a lot more valuable to you. So I think it probably evens out
a little bit. I think that in a 12 teamer, I'm more comfortable stashing a high profile stash.
Yeah.
Somebody who is, because that 30th round guy, I'm going to,
In a 12, typically you're looking for the most elite guy you can get at every position. So exactly. It makes more sense.
Yeah. So in that 30th guy I get in my draft, and the replacement value for the 29th and 30th guy. But if I'm using my 29th or 30th round pick on a stash, I'm not actually rotating that position. Right. And I'm just kind of crossing my fingers. So I don't mind grabbing a, you know, going after a Connor Griffin in a 12 as opposed to in a 15 where, you know, that I don't know when I'm going to have to pay the same price, right? I'm going to have to pay the same price for Connor Griffin or that, you know, top high end prospect. And if I don't know that I'm going to be able to rotate that position because of where I drafted him, I'm like, I'm just not going to be able to do that to myself and pay that draft price. I'm less likely to do it, but I'm probably still going to use a, I'll probably still have a stash spot on my roster, but it'll probably be somebody that I grab later on in the draft, in the second to last, maybe even last round, because the replacement value of that spot is not going to be there, like it is in a 12 teamer. And obviously this is very different in a team, in a league. Like I am way more likely to stash somebody in a head-to-head league than I am in a roto league, because I trust myself in being able to do what I need to do week in and week out to get to the playoffs. And so in my PL staff league, I grabbed Wheeler, Rodon. Did I get Snell? Like I grabbed a lot of pitchers later that I knew I wouldn't have for at least a month, if not multiple months.
Yeah, so you just have to tread water and then you're set.
Just need to tread water. Yep. And it's like my own little trade deadline. And like I'm just trading for all these guys within my own roster. I don't have to do any trades to get better before the playoffs. So obviously completely different format. Completely
and an IL. So you'll be able to fill those
three
slots.
ILs. So we're good.
There they are.
In my home league, we have 10 IL spots because everybody was just sick and tired of all the injuries that were always happening. And I'm like, we're all like, fine. Actually, the rule is unlimited ILs, but Yahoo only allows you to give up to 10. So we're like, until Yahoo changes it, we'll have 10. Nobody has complained about that so far.
Yeah, my home league, keeper league, is unlimited IL.
Yep.
And that becomes interesting. Being a keeper league, that's what makes it really interesting. Yeah.
It's nice in a dynasty or a keeper league. That is important, I think, actually, to be able to have absolutely all those IL spots, because you want people to be able to rebuild and build up to future competitive without losing their competitive edge this current season. Otherwise people just tank.
You don't want somebody to have to drop a guy that's going to be valuable to them in the future just so they can enter a valid starting lineup.
Exactly. All right, well, we have Fab to talk about, right? But we are of course still considering what these last couple picks or what these stashes might look like if you are still drafting, or if you're considering drafting one of these still available players in Fab. So not drafting, but bidding on them, excuse me. So we did this last year. We're going to do it again because we haven't done it enough this offseason, but we can do it 2 weeks in a row. We're going to play ask. And we're going to do a rookie edition, right? So the groupings that I put together are all rookies across the board. I checked their status. There's a couple of players I wanted to include, but they've all gone over their rookie status. The 140 at bats or 50 innings pitch, I think it is, from over the course of their major league career. So we'll start at position two. We'll start at catcher. We'll go around. We'll finish up with pitchers. And then we will go through some, if you know, there's some news that's going to come up through this game, we'll bring up. But if there's any other news that would maybe impact how you might be spending your Fab dollars this weekend, we'll get to that as well. So make sure you listen to the end for that before, and this will go out on Sunday, right before Fab bids are due in NFBC. That is 10 o'clock Eastern for every league, except for the Earth Leagues. I think we set that for midnight. We get special treatment for that, so that's kind of fun.
Yep.
But everybody else across the board, 10 p.m. Eastern. And so make sure you set your alarms. Always, we'll always say, like, there's nothing stopping you from going in and placing bids right now. You don't have to wait till Sunday night to do it, like I tend to do sometimes. You can do it on Wednesdays, and then it's a lot easier on Sundays when you already have some bids placed and edited, or just to edit. So we're going to play Ask Rookie Edition in just a second, but first we are going to take a quick break. All right, Kevin, I got to check. How's your basketball game going?
As you brought that up, I went to not covering with 10 seconds left.
I will close my mouth.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
That was totally my fault. All right.
Well, now I got to hit some free throws. I hate watching that. That's why I hadn't looked. I hate watching when I bet on basketball at the end of a game. Because I hate watching the whole free throw thing.
All right. So we're playing Ask for those listening at home for the first time ever. Ask is avoid, stream, keep, our version of MFK. You have three players I'm going to give you. You have to avoid one of them, aka you're not even considering drafting them. You would not consider fabbing for them throughout the course of the season. You can stream one of them. In other words, you're good to fab them this weekend. And you might even draft them, but you would plan on kicking them off your roster or, you know, stringing them in and out. And one of them you'd feel comfortable keeping, and you have to make that decision about one of these. One you would draft. If you sell a draft, you would bid top dollar to get them in fab this weekend, and you would plan on keeping them all season long. So our catchers, our rookie catchers that are being drafted in most, if not all, 12 teamers, and of course, NFBC two catcher league, Harry Ford in Washington, Carter Jensen in San Diego, formerly of your Kansas City, and Samuel Basalo of Baltimore. They are not being drafted in that order per se. I believe that they are in reverse order for what I just listed, but that's neither here nor there. What I care about, Kevin, especially with a wild card stashing mindset, which one of these guys, these catchers, are you good to avoid, stream, or keep for the 2026 season?
The avoid here for me is Harry Ford, with recent news that he was sent down to AAA.
I mean, it's everything.
Yep.
I came up with this list before that happened.
Yep. I'm sure you did. And so the other two are close for me. And I was very outspoken that Carter Jensen was being overdrafted for Kansas City. That may have changed, and that might have hurt a lot of my teams, where Freddie Fermin is my second catcher in a couple of spots and my third catcher in a whole lot of drafting holds. Pretty much everyone I drafted, NFBC 50s, any drafting hold, he was my third catcher. But yeah, Jensen probably has the playing time now. But I'd still rather have Basalo, I think. It's close, but Basalo, I think, is still the guy. Rutschman struggles on the offensive side over the past season and a half. I think gives him that playing time that we want, those plate appearances we talk about at catcher. So Basalo's my keep. Jensen is my stream, although he could become much better than that as the season goes on, and maybe even right out of the gate. We'll have to see. And then Harry Ford, due to actually being sent to AAA for now, he would be my avoid, but keep an eye on him because Kybert Ruiz was not good last year.
No, really disappointing in general, Ruiz was. Question, though, does Basalo, in my mind, has a path to more at-bats than Adley Rutschman does? Just because, one, he's already gotten paid. so I do not expect him to get sent down ever.
And then, two, I know where you're going. The way Rutschman has been hitting for the last year and a half, he will not DH when he's not catching, but Basalo can.
Yeah. Well, Basalo will DH more than he catches, but he'll catch when he doesn't DH.
Right.
And so I think that there is as much as, you know, I love Adley Rutschman, you know, I do think that there's more volume potential now in conjunction with injury history for Rutschman as well, for Basalo in general. So I think that's the right order to put those guys in.
Let's go. And I just really quick, I think I think that one's pretty cut and dry. Unless you really think Jensen's going to get a lot more playing time than I feel like he might right away. That group of three there, I'm pretty confident about the way we lined it up.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was a pretty easy win, especially with the Harry Ford news of being sent down. Corner infield, first, third. This is a little bit of a jump. Sal Stewart at first base eligibility. Rumors of getting second base eligibility, so I'm still keeping him in the corner infield grouping right here. We have Murakami coming over from Japan for the Chicago White Sox, and then the other third baseman in the group, Okamoto, in Toronto. They're all rookies. Two of them have no experience. Sal Stewart did not get enough to do away with his rookie of the year status. Does Sal Stewart have a strong chance at rookie of the year? Before you answer the ask question, I haven't looked at the odds, but if he is starting at the, you know, at the major league level to start the season, which he should be, I don't know if it's officially been announced on the roster, but there's no reason he wouldn't be. From my mind, what chances are you giving him to take rookie of the year, the NL rookie of the year honors?
I think he's got a really good shot. As he was coming up through the minors, would he develop power was a question. He was always considered a good hitter in general, but we've seen that over his last couple of seasons in the minors. He's really developed that power. So, yeah, and with that said, he's my easy keep out of these three as well.
Mm-hmm. I know how you feel about Murakami. You said so many times, but has anything changed throughout the offseason in his situation in Chicago that would make him your streamer, or is this an obvious avoid?
The only aspect that I give Murakami the edge here is in playing time.
Sure.
I think he's going to get it right out the gate. And the White Sox are going to let him roll. But at the same time, I just can't do that strikeout rate. I'd rather have Okamoto and hope he gets the playing time in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And it looks like he should, where it's just not as certain as it is for Murakami, in my opinion.
Sure. All three of these guys not available in your fab. So if you want them and you haven't added them to any of your rosters yet, you're going to have to jump into a draft. Because they're all going within the top 300, I think, 325 of drafts. And
yeah, it's close. I think there might have been a couple really early drafts where Okamoto might be available, and I would check that out. But our Knicks group, Adam, this if you drafted early, you might have to choose between all three of these guys.
It's true. But yeah, I'm looking at just online championships roster percentages. So if you did do a fab league early on, you might have a shot at one of those guys, especially Okamoto, because he did sign a little bit later. Yeah. Middle infield, though, as you said, a lot juicier. Connor Griffin, top dog in this list as far as ADP goes. I've only got one league where I'm exposed to him, and that's not going to change. I did grab him in my PL staff league, again, head-to-head league with IL spots, no NA spots, but so it is truly a stash. We'll see come next week. JJ Weatherhall of St. Louis, and then Kevin McGonigal in Detroit. We talked about McGonigal a decent amount this offseason, only because, if nothing else, in the back of my head, I've been looking at Zach McKinstry quite a bit. As we know, as we always say, like, we're always targeting guys that can hit at the top of a lineup who play middle infield or specifically shortstop, because these guys are not typically wanting to be platooned by their team. The only way Zach McKinstry gets kicked out is if Kevin McGonigal is a thing.
It's looking more and more that way.
Yeah. When he's a thing, McKinstry still has value as a pretty much can play every Swiss Army knife of a player. But obviously not as much of a guarantee in playing.
Yeah, we were counting on those every day at bats.
So, Kevin, if you got a draft today, you have a draft in the morning. If you have a draft in the morning, you have to avoid one of these guys, stream one of them, and you're going to keep one of them all season long. Where are they gonna fall?
Okay, so love all three of these guys. I don't recall having any shares of any of them, but I could be incorrect about that because I love them all. But a lot of my drafts, we didn't have the news about these guys that we have gotten recently. Connor Griffin, I think it's been 2 to 3 weeks ago that we became pretty certain he was going to make the team and be in that lineup on an everyday basis. It's only been about a week, I think, for McGonigal. JJ Weatherholt, I think we probably assumed that, but we didn't know it. We probably thought that for longer. I don't think it's that big of an if. I'm going to assume all three of these guys start the season with their teams. And if they do, they're playing every day, or they would be in the minors. So with that said, due to lineup, I think Weatherholt could be great, but he's my avoid. So it comes to Connor Griffin or Kevin McGonigal, and I think Connor Griffin is ranked above McGonigal on so many prospect lists because we assumed he was going to arrive to the majors sooner. I think it's a lot closer than people think, and I'm not so sure I wouldn't take McGonigal ahead. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I absolutely could be wrong here, but McGonigal's my keep, Griffin my streamer, and Weatherholt my avoid, just because, and that's only a lineup thing. I will not avoid Weatherholt.
Sure. Yeah. You have to make a choice, right? I make this difficult for you, Kevin. Weatherholt, I feel like you're right. We assume he makes the roster, but it had less to do with him and more to do with the Cardinals and their other options, as opposed to, you know, McGonigal, you know, he has to earn it type of thing. It's like Detroit has options that they can plug in at shortstop throughout the, you know, the first month or two of the season. But if he forces their hand, which it sure seems like he's trying to do, you know, I would expect him to be up from the jump anyway. You always have the extra wrinkle of if these guys qualify for that benefit, that extra draft pick that their teams could win if they win Rookie of the Year. I believe all three of these guys are on two of the three top 100 lists that they have to be on, and they have to start the season now, and they have to hit a certain amount of at-bats, I think, throughout the season. But that doesn't stop a team from putting them on the roster to start the season, waiting two or three
weeks, for a couple weeks,
sending them down for 2 to 3 weeks, and then calling them back up with enough time for them to accrue enough stats to still win Rookie of the Year and keep their rookie eligibility. Now, I might correct myself. I believe if they win Rookie of the Year, they also win like an extra year or one less year of control or something like that. I think there's some other wrinkle in that.
Yeah, something like that. And it might even be like top three if I'm remembering right.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's something along those lines.
Yeah. I think Adley got that because he didn't win, but he was in top three, and he gained an extra year or lost a year of control, I guess is the way to put it. I mean, I don't have my hands on Weatherholt or McGonigal, mostly because I've already used my stash in some other capacity in most scenarios. But to your point, these guys are turning out to not be stashes, or at least not looking like they're going to be a stash. They're going to be
McGonigal went from I don't think many people thought he was going to make the team out of the gate, or he would have been being drafted earlier, and he has skyrocketed over the last couple of days.
So we've seen this, though. We've seen this with other players in spring training, and it goes both directions. We have the Tatises. We have the Bobby Witts of the world who, you know, they earn their way up through spring training and they force their team's hand. And then
I think the big one that happened in spring training was J-Rod.
Rodriguez. And these are very positive examples. But yeah. Then we have the Jordan Walkers of the world who are like, again, they forced their team's hand in spring training and then did absolutely nothing with it after the fact. And a lot like Jordan Walker and others are still doing the same thing. Kalanick might have actually fit into that as well as an example from a positive training. Hurt.
Yeah.
So which one of these guys do you think fits? Like, is there any one of them that you're more afraid fit into the Jordan Walker bucket than the J-Rod bucket? Or Bobby Witt. We'll use Bobby Witt because it's
in position. As crazy as it may sound to some people, because for years we talked about the St. Louis Cardinals voodoo magic, but in recent years they haven't gotten anything out of the prospects and they let them go. Randy Orozarena wasn't good until he was, you know, and and several other guys in that concept. So I would say Weatherholt's the one I would be the most worried about, and it's because of the Cardinals.
Nolan Gorman really hasn't, you know, I mean, he's got some power in there, but he was also a
Adolis Garcia. They had there were several. They were all outfielders too, I think.
I just meant the guys that are on the team. Like Nolan Gorman comes to mind now because I know he's a top prospect and he's still there. Jordan Walker, obviously. But yeah, the Cardinal outfield curse. It's like you can't be good until you get traded, dropped, and
then you're
up.
An all-star.
Yep. I mean, Garcia was a Rule 5 pick. There you go. Now he's in Philadelphia, and he continues to be. I'm all done with my drafts, but like he continues to be like the guy. It's like on my draft, I'm like, Garcia's still there, and he's just taking the place in the cleanup spot in Philadelphia. So it's like you gotta at least pay attention. All right. Well, speaking of outfield. Let's jump over to the outfield, and we are going to do that after this break. All right, Kevin, speaking of outfield and speaking of Philadelphia, we're going to lead this off with Justin Crawford, who is expected to be one of the starting outfielders for the Philadelphia Phillies, if not the fourth outfielder. Carson Benji of the New York Mets, still no guarantee. I think that he has made the roster as well, but it is one of those expectations, especially after the Mets did not make any moves in the outfield in free agency. And then Dylan Beavers, who did make his debut in Baltimore, still kept his rookie eligibility going into 2026. All exciting in their own right. Beavers, obviously, I'm the most familiar with just because I rostered him in a fantasy league, traded him away, and then I was very upset that he got called up like about a week after I traded him. Whatever. I won the championship. I don't care what did. Everything I did was the right thing. So I'm just telling myself that.
You didn't make any mistakes. If you hoist
none
that
of
trophy.
None of these guys have guaranteed everyday playing time by any stretch of the imagination. But they are the top three outfielders going in drafts, according to ADP, that have rookie eligibility. So, Kevin, I ask you, you have to avoid, you have to stream, and you have to keep each one of these guys. What buckets do they fall in?
Okay, so I do have to give an edge to Dylan Beavers because he has the experience and the most guaranteed playing time. But he's not my keep. My keep is going to be Justin Crawford in Philadelphia because he has a specific skill that we know we can count on. As long as he's playing, we know we get stolen bases out of him. So Justin Crawford with a decent batting average, I believe, in that lineup, run scored. So he's at least a three-category player out the gate in my mind. So Justin Crawford is the keep. And I hate to say this because I think Carson Benj probably does get the playing time, but I'm not certain of it yet. So he's going to be my avoid, and because of the experience and already been with the team and got some playing time last season, Dylan Beavers will be my stream.
I think that Crawford, that's a good analysis of Crawford in general. He also benefits from the Johan Rojas being suspended thing as well, not only to make the roster, but also he just fills that void. He is Johan Rojas, probably a little bit better than him overall, where Rojas is basically a stolen base threat, and that's about it.
Crawford. Yeah, I wouldn't be worried about Rojas coming back and taking his position back.
Right. Exactly. So I agree with that a lot as well. Plus, you know, Crawford being the lefty, you know, even if he does get put into a platoon, at least, you know, he's putting into that shortstop. I worry about, you're right, from the jump, Beavers is, quote, guaranteed the most playing time, but I do not think he gets the most at-bats by the end of the year from either one of them, because I do believe at least if Benji is called up, he is the type of player that I think the Mets are going to be like, if we're going to have him up here, we're going to play him. And
it sounded more and more like he's going to make the roster, I think. Mm-hmm.
So if he makes the roster, I don't think he's making the roster just to sit there either. Especially with the options that the Mets have across the board between, the rest of their outfield, they did make, I'll correct myself, they got Luis Robert Jr. To play center field from Chicago. Obviously, Juan Soto is still there, but their DH is kind of being held up by their infielders between, you know, Vientos and Brett Beatty, with Polanco being coming in to take over for Alonso. And so, I mean, they have Mike Tauchman as a non-roster invitee, possibly making the roster out of camp, and Tyrone Taylor still there as well as a short side platoon. So I do think Benji, if he is there, he is, as roster resource has him there. Well, they have him on a strong side platoon in right field with probably with Taylor. But we'll see. I think that they're going to give him opportunity to win both sides of the platoon and then kind of force their hand. It's nice that you have Taylor. You can only platoon so many players. So he probably would be the first one to get platooned. But I do trust Benji to be the one that, you know, gets, I think Benji gets more at bats of the three of them by the end of the season. So I do like that. I like how you kind of started that off, and you start talking about Beaver, and you're like, he's going to pick Beaver as his keep. And then you're like, I'm not going to pick him. I'm like, oh, okay. Okay.
We're on the same page. Yeah. It's just that he is the most projectable at this point.
Sure.
But in a couple of weeks, that could change very quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, the options, Tyler O'Neill's not going to stay healthy. Colton Kowser has had his own injuries as well. And then Taylor Ward has probably been the most consistent other outfielder of this bunch. But yeah, there's going to be lots of opportunities for Beaver to get in there, especially also as a lefty.
Yeah.
All right. We'll move into pitching. We're just going to do starters. Starters was harder. Just because there are a lot of them. So I did jump around a little bit. I had to use Tetsuya Mai from Houston. He's the highest ranked by ADP of all the players we've talked about. Next up would either be Connor Griffin or Sal Stewart. But we've got Mai in Houston, Robbie Snelling, who did just get sent down. He's not going to make the opening day roster rotation in Miami. And then J.R. Richie in Atlanta, who was turning heads at the beginning of spring training. But honestly, I haven't heard his name come up quite at all in the second half of spring training. So I'm not sure what he's doing. But Atlanta has had some recent history of pushing some of their young guys up earlier than probably most would expect. And with all of the injuries that Atlanta's already had to deal with on both sides of the ball this offseason, I would not be too surprised to see Richie up sooner than Snelling at this point. So between Mai, Snelling, and Richie, I'm pretty sure the obvious one is obvious, but I'm going to let you say it anyway. Who are you going to avoid, who are you going to stream, and who are you going to keep?
Yeah, and mine's the keep, as you were saying. And when you made this list, that may not have been so apparent, but it is now, and it's that time of year. So we'll take the information as we get it and start knowing what we'd rather do. I think in spite of being sent down, Snelling is my stream here. I have a few shares, knowing that I actually leaned on the side that he does not start the season with the Marlins, but I think he's really exciting, and what I think we'll see him early. Richie, same. I don't think he's going to make this roster. He's not on the 40 man at the moment, I don't think. Maybe he is. The Atlanta has had injury issues, and he may get an opportunity, but I feel like Snelling will get an opportunity and early. It's closer than I thought it would be when I first read these names. When you put this list out, it's making me think a little bit, but I'm still going to lean Snelling. And that's probably a personal bias to make myself feel better that I have several shares of him.
So I wonder if there's a world in which Robbie Snelling ends up being your keep and Amai ends up becoming your streamer.
If I knew Snelling had a job, that would absolutely
be. And hear me out. Even without the job, just based on draft cost, it really depends.
And I'm not confident in the ratios from Amai.
This is exactly where I'm getting it. It's like, are you willing
to? It didn't take much, Adam. You talked me into that right away. Yeah. I'm there.
Now, it obviously depends on if you've already used your one stash or if you're willing to take on a second stash for Snelling.
Because
Snelling
is what you have for pitching on your roster at that point in the draft. Yeah. But
all that matters.
It doesn't take much to talk me into that at all.
Because as you said at the start of the show, it's all about those quality of innings you're going to get from that player. And is Snelling a stash? Yes, he's still a stash because you don't know when those innings are going to start. You don't know how good they're going to be at the major league level. He's still on Miami. You're still chasing wins pretty hard there. There's going to be, I do think, Miami has had some positive history with, bringing up, they used to think Miami, obviously pitching machine, pitching prospect machine.
They're not a playoff team, they're okay. They're not what we saw out of the White Sox for a couple of years. They're not what we see out of the Rockies. They're still going to compete, so the wins can still be there.
It's true. Yeah. All right. Well, something to consider as you again finish up your last couple drafts or draft of the season and go into your first fab period.
And here we go.
We're going to go through. I'm going to scan through some of the news that might have come up, but ultimately we do need to, probably pick up some guys in fab. Especially if you did do a fab league draft in December or even January or even early February. There's going to be some things you need to adjust. I know I did my Glarf draft in late February, and I know I need to make some adjustments. So we'll get to that. We are going to take one last break. All right, Kevin, let's do it. Let's just get right into, mid-season form. We'll go category by category. If you need to make an adjustment in power, who might you one? I'm gonna scan through the news and see who you might have to be thinking about replacing or at least putting a Band-Aid on. Kyle Stowers was removed from the game today with a right hamstring tightness. So you might he missed a couple weeks last season with the same strain of his hammy. You might have to replace some power with Kyle Stowers at least to start the season. We've got Jason Dominguez has officially been optioned by the Yankees. It's a lot of people were expecting that to be an option. Yankees made it official. He will not. Spencer Jones is also somebody that I could have put on this list because he was actually turning some heads in spring training, but he won't make the roster either. A lot of options in at the DH position and in the outfield for the Yankees. Jason Dominguez, not one of them. Smaller ones. Nolan Jones was outrated to AAA as well. And I'll keep scrolling, but if I see anything, Harrison Bader doesn't fit in power. I would say maybe that's more of an opportunity. But he had a tight hamstring and is considered day-to-day as well. We are recording this on Friday evening, by the way. So if I'm saying today, I'm talking about things that happened on Friday. Anything from that or any other pieces of news that you noticed that would kind of fit into the power category that you need to make considerations for?
I don't know if there's a couple of guys that I just drafted in a draft and hold that I still have going on. In fact, there's like three rounds remaining and it's my CLQ and I feel pretty good about a couple of picks. And one of them is Brandon Lockridge in Milwaukee. And he hasn't had a ton of power throughout his minor league career. He did hit 14 when he was in the Yankees organization at AA in 2022. And we haven't seen a lot of power out of him, but we haven't seen a whole lot of opportunity for him either. And in spring training, I know it's spring training, but we do think Brandon Lockridge is now going to make this Milwaukee Brewers roster and probably get the playing time. And with four home runs and three stolen bases in 13 games, this is looking pretty nice as a 29-year-old rookie. Basically, he does have 160 major league plate appearances, but so he is not technically a rookie, but 29-year-old. Looks like he's going to have some play here for the Brewers, and he's having a wonderful spring. I'm not putting a ton of stock into those four home runs. It's sure. It's about the stolen bases. You know, sure. I love that he's hit four home runs in spring training, and he had the 14 back in 2022 at AA for the Yankees. So I think there's moderate power here. But I really should have waited till the next question you asked me and put him in here for stolen bases. But I just think he could be well into the double digits walk rate, low 20s to mid 20s strikeout rate all throughout the minors. So I think he could be an all around, like contribute batting average, contribute obviously the stolen bases, runs, and if he gets back to what he did back in 21 and 22 in the minors, yeah, the power can be there a little bit too to give us the home runs and RBIs, at least get us to double digits and 60 to 70 RBI. I think Lockridge is really nice and somebody that would not I shouldn't say he wouldn't be on anybody's radar. He wasn't on my radar prior to this recent news that he's going to make the team.
Well, if you need to fill in any other power, I've already got him in a bunch of places, but he's only 24% rostered in online championships. That's your 12 teamers. Your boy, Josh Bell, readily available in a lot of places, should be playing close to every day at first base for the Twins, who unrelatedly just released Liam Hendricks, unfortunately.
Yeah, I saw that right before we started recording. Made me so sad.
The other power guy that did get sent down that I thought was worth mentioning that you might want to consider whether or not you want to stash him or not, because he doesn't have any positions eligible is Bryce Eldridge of San Francisco. Right. It's going to take him a lot longer to gain that first base eligibility, if anything, now that he will be starting. I love this. He was sent down along with Tyler Fitzgerald and Grant McRae to AAA Sacramento. Yes, there is also a AAA team that plays in the Major League Stadium that the A's play in. That is sad.
As a Red Sox fan, I have to ask you, how much do you think this has to do with is Rafael Devers being adamant that he does not want to DH, or would we see Bryce Eldridge?
I don't know. I feel like that's the low-hanging fruit.
I feel like Buster Posey would say, get over it. You're the DH. But at the same time, that's probably what we're seeing here.
It might be. I mean, this is what happened in Boston for the most part. I think Boston didn't handle the situation very well. But Devers said all the right things when he went to San Francisco. He's like, I'll do whatever they want me to do. But right. It's been a season now. It's been an off-season. Like,
and no, I'm not a DH.
Yeah.
Other guy that recently, due to him signing, because he's one of the guys that, as we talk sometimes, could have went to Japan or Korea or maybe even retired. I doubt that, but it may have been a possibility. But now that Rhys Hoskins is re-signed, he's somebody I'm definitely interested in for power late in drafts and would look at in Fab this weekend if I need him.
Same kind of type of player, Marcell Ozuna.
Yep.
Is available in 15% of 12 team online championships.
That's right, because that was it's been a few weeks, but there were Fab leagues being drafted before he signed. So absolutely, there might be some pretty big Fab bids on him this week.
Hmm. Of course, he is one in NFBC that has that UT designation. I do not expect him to gain anything other than that in Pittsburgh. So you'll plan accordingly for that one.
And I'm not talking triple digits, but I'm saying a couple bucks isn't going to get him.
All right, let's get some speed options in there. It's a lot of those. I'm curious to know if Crawford, that's JP Crawford, wrong Crawford, Connor Crawford, also not concerning. Yeah, Justin Crawford, 99% rostered. So there's one league out there where Justin Crawford is available in your online championship. But if that's not an option, then Kevin, any other speed guys out there that have impressed enough to at least catch your eye outside of Lockridge?
This isn't I have talked about this guy, and I feel like in some 12 team leagues he probably hasn't been drafted, maybe even a handful of 15s out there, and that's Nassim Nunez in Washington. Talked about him. He is the everyday shortstop. You're not going to get anything else, but you'll get those stolen bases. So yeah,
all day long.
I've been grabbing him late. Absolutely. And then in Seattle, I'm looking here really quick. I think we'll get some stolen bases out of Leo Rivas that is set to make the Mariners roster. Second base, middle infielder, and he's stolen a ton of bases in the minor leagues, and it really looks like he's going to make this roster now. I grabbed him. The draft and hold I talked about, I was so excited. I grabbed Lockridge and I grabbed Rivas, and then the news came out that made us realize that Eric Lauer is probably in the rotation, and I tried to grab him, but he went like five picks before me. So I have had some good fortune, I hope, with news recently with a draft and hold, a slow draft and hold still going. But Rivas, he stole 50 bases at AA in 20, just two seasons ago. So absolutely. And he really looks like he's going to make this club.
Yeah. Nunez only 26% rostered across the board. So
if you need speed, that's my number one target. Absolutely. Yeah. He's a shortstop on a bad team. He's going to play every day.
He's going to play every day. And then he has the ability to play other positions as well. Yep. So there's a non-zero chance he gains some other position eligibility in the next, in the first 2 months of the season.
I think he's one of my most rostered players in 15s. I don't think I need to go that deep in a 12, but in 15s, I think he's easily one of my most rostered players.
I got to look at that. I'm pretty sure mine are Jose Caballero and Salvi. My two. I know I'm pretty sure I have them on all six of my rosters for this season.
Mine is my most rostered by far. It's not close, is Brandon Donovan. Just where he's being drafted as the everyday leadoff hitter, Seattle has announced flat out publicly that he's going to lead off versus righties and lefties with that lineup. I don't understand how he's still going after pick 200 in a lot of drafts.
98% rostered in the online championship, 12. Yeah. So,
but he's going late.
Got to check. Yep. He might be there. Yeah, obviously that made a big difference. The trade made a big difference on going to Seattle. Absolutely. And the announcement on top of that. All right, opportunity. I, like, in the last pick of almost all of my drafts, I have been grabbing, I've grabbed Patrick Bailey in two of them, only because we have that one game on Wednesday of the Yankees and Giants. So I grabbed Patrick Bailey in two leagues, and I grabbed Ryan McMahon in another league. Because he was still there as a 12 teamer. Ryan McMahon readily available in all these 12 teamers. Again, this is all about opportunity. I do not expect to hold on to either one of these guys past week one, but I'm going to gain eight more at bats on that day, because you can make that lineup switch on Thursday or Friday and cake them out. Or maybe they, you know, maybe I keep them in for the weekend. I don't know. But those are the type of opportunities I'm looking for in this first, you know, fab period. You got to take whatever you can get. You got to squeeze every at bat out of your lineup that you possibly can. So if you didn't draft them in your 30th round, because that's all you had to do, check to see if they're available, because they are Ryan McMahon 5% rostered in online championships. This is my favorite way to spend my first $5 in fab is on a player that I know nobody actually wants, but will actually do something. Guarantee that Ryan McMahon starts. I'm more confident that Patrick Bailey starts in that game, but I think pretty sure Logan Webb is starting, so we don't have a lefty on the mound for McMahon to not start against if they are platooning that situation by the Yankees. Any other opportunities that you're trying to take advantage of in this first one?
Yes. I was big on this guy last season. He didn't get the playing time I did expect him to get, but I'm going back to the well. I do believe Jacob Young is going to get the run in Washington I thought he was going to get last season. Due to his defense, he only had 364 plate appearances last year after 521 in 2024. And that's what I wanted, because he had 33 stolen bases in 2024. That dropped to 15 and 364 plate appearances last season. But I do believe he's going to get a good portion of that playing time back. Maybe not to 521, maybe not to 33 stolen bases, but to 450 plus and 25 plus stolen bases. So the opportunity for Jacob Young, I think, is looking up for us.
We'll get into the wild card, but there's a lot of, quote, opportunity you can take advantage of with, like, some of the guys that weren't drafted, but may be stashable. Even if you don't want to stash them yourself, this is, again, as a reminder, this is your opportunity to bid them up and then drop them next week or the week after that, and kind of seeing where that goes. And if everybody in your league doesn't have that notebook that Kevin was talking about, there you go. You at least you're keeping notes. All right, moving on then to our pitching categories. this is just like opportunity. You obviously are, if you're chasing wins and you're tracing strikeouts, there's only, you know, game. There's one game on Wednesday, handful of games, most of the games on Thursday, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Not everybody's going to pitch that you drafted. If you drafted a number five pitcher, strong possibility he doesn't get into games this week. So you want to make sure that you are filling that pitcher slot, every one of those pitcher slots that you have available to you, all nine of them in the NFBC platform. That's how many you get. You want to make sure you're getting numbers out of every one of those nine spots. So if you need to chase some available wins or strikeouts, Kevin, is there anybody out there that you might be looking at?
Yeah, I already brought him up briefly, but we didn't really talk about him in this respect, and that's Eric Lauer. Blue Jays, with the Yesavage news, looks like Lauer is going to be not only in the rotation, but being the only lefty in the rotation, probably a third
for season,
or maybe even second at times, but somewhere in that 2-3-4 range. He won't be the last guy. And so with him entering the rotation now with Toronto's lineup, and I don't want to just say that that's the only reason. I do, performance and what we think, I'm stumbling over what I'm trying to say. How we think he will perform, there's what I'm trying to say, plays a big role as well. But we've seen good outings out of Lauer in the past. Mm-hmm. And if we're chasing wins, once again, that's our category here. This, with that lineup, that bullpen, I'll take a shot on Lauer. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The name I started drafting recently, late, and I will be looking to see where he's still available in my earlier drafts in Fab, is Anthony Kay, who the White Sox did say will be their number three starter. He, just like Lauer, is the only lefty in their rotation. So I'm not surprised that he, you know, isn't the number five. He's officially the number three. So he'll get in this first series against Milwaukee. So we don't really know what to expect out of Milwaukee as a team. Obviously, they were a very good team last year. They surprised a lot of people, and they, you know, had a very good record. But they didn't bring back everybody, and, you know, who's to say what they're going to do? If you're chasing wins, it's the White Sox. Maybe it's a fool's errand, but he will get you the innings coming over from MPB, or coming back from the MPB. He continued to pitch deep into games. He had 155 innings last year in the MPB. So he is stretched out. He is definitely a starter. I would expect the White Sox to let him roll, especially in this first start. Anthony Kay of the White Sox, be somebody that I'd be looking at. And I think we'll be talking about him, and he's readily available across pretty much everywhere. Let's see, Anthony Kay, 3% rostered in those 12 teamers on NFBC. So going down and trying to, this is probably the toughest one for this first Fab period, Kevin, because usually we're targeting relievers. We're looking for ratio help. At the very beginning of the season, you don't even know, you don't have any ratios to help yet. And we're trying to target usage usually in this. We want to get as many innings to make those ratios hit a lot harder. But regardless, is there somebody out there that you are confident will pitch, even if it's just 1-2 innings this week, that will still at least get you going in the right direction in your ratios?
Yeah, I'm glad you prefaced this way, because I was going to start my answer, if you'd asked in a different way, was, I hope this doesn't sound like a cop-out, but it kind of is. But it's, you know, we kind of build this list throughout the season. We start adding guys to it. But at this point in the season, you're going to have leagues where you're not going to get enough starts out of your starting pitchers this weekend. If you have fours and fives in your starting lineup in a deeper league, that they're probably not starting this weekend. So you need to look at some of these guys. And yeah, it's a cop out, but any of them, right? Seventh, eighth inning guys for any of these teams. We're going to talk about them all season long. We're going to add them to our list, and they'll be big. One name I did want to bring up, you asked me about him a couple weeks ago as a closer stash, and I don't think he is a closer stash, but this opening weekend, if I don't have enough starters, I'd love to have Brad Keller on my team to throw him out there. I would expect him to at least one, if not a couple of appearances in the shortened week. So guys like him, but there's a lot of them, and it's almost anybody, just the setup guys for any team. But then exactly what you said, we'll start to get a little better idea of how each team is using these guys this year, because it's so volatile for a lot of these teams, most teams, how they use their relievers from year to year, and how they relievers perform is very volatile. So yeah, this is a better question we can address in a couple of weeks, but for now, getting us through this opening weekend, you don't have enough starters. Somebody like Brad Keller is great.
Jeremiah Estrada, readily available, even in 12 teamers.
That surprises me. I'm surprised he wasn't drafted more.
Yeah. 35%. I'm sure he's more readily, he won't be as readily available in your main events after these drafts are concluded. Those are 15 teamers, a little bit different, but even in your 12 teamers for this opening weekend, go, you know, grab somebody like Estrada. But even the guys that like you didn't want to draft because you weren't sure if they were going to be a closer, like Garrett Clevinger of Tampa, like 44%, he's available in over half of these 12 teamers. Like, he's still valuable in this first week. You might not trust that he'll be the closer in Tampa for the entire season or at all, but this week, you know, guys like that. You might be pleasantly surprised when they vulture a save on top of your ratio help. So
I think this is the biggest point, and probably the only reason that people that drafted the last few days prior to Fab running on Sunday would realize, oh, maybe I didn't take this into consideration and I need to do something here. I think it's, you're not, you may not have, you know, seven starters to throw out there, and you might not have one of these guys on your roster. It may be time to, you know, everybody's got it. If you drafted more than a couple of weeks ago, we all have somebody we can let go, and you go get one of these guys. And I think that's probably one of the bigger points of this episode. You don't want a starting pitcher in your lineup that's not going to pitch, even for a shortened week.
Exactly. Yeah. Never want to take a zero unless you're at a point in the season.
Especially if you're in an overall contest. Exactly. You cannot take a zero. Yeah.
So, I mean, that pretty much covered the next category anyway, the saves category. It's like, you're just, like I just said, you're looking for these guys that may possibly, you know, surprise you. If that's the category that you're trying to vulture away, just look for those, you know, the guys that are fighting for a position at the top of a bullpen that may have gotten not valued during your draft, but now all of a sudden they might be. Pretty much everybody in Tampa Bay that's not named Griffin Jacks. Anybody.
I think we mentioned a couple weeks ago that, but I've come to realize, I think Taylor Rogers is going to get some saves in Minnesota. So we've talked about him many times in the past, but if he's actually going to get save opportunities, I'd definitely be interested.
Yeah. Pretty much all of the bullpens that we say I'm just ignoring. I'm just leaving it alone.
Now it's time to grab one of them.
Tampa's kind of like that. St. Louis is kind of like that. Jojo Romero seemed like he was the guy, but he hasn't really looked that good either. So who's to say, again, St. Louis doesn't surprise us in the opening weekend and provide us with three different save opportunities from three different closers.
I was sitting in
Anaheim, another good one.
Yeah, I was sitting in, this is kind of a little bit of sidetrack, but it is relevant. Watching an auction today, and I'm not going to name the players, but I am going to name the drafter because we all know what a great fantasy baseball player he is, Phil Dessau. in an auction this morning, I watched the first two players he drafted were closers. As they came up, I don't think he nominated either one, but he grabbed a guy like this that we're talking about was the first player he drafted for like $5 as a spec. And then he went and got an elite guy. So he spent $31. And I took note of this. One of the best fantasy players we know in an auction spent $31, but one of them was a spec. The other one was the elite guy.
Yeah, just the way you choose to build your and to do that early is always always interesting. Whoever throws that kind of a player out there
My point is in our snake drafts, grab one of the early closers and then wait. Mm-hmm. And one of these guys we're talking about might be okay to get you through until a fab weekend here in 4 or 5 weeks, and we'll add a few more saves to the roster.
We're talking about saves. I gotta bring this up because you talked about it, I think, last week or the last episode. Robert Stevenson suffering a setback with his shoulder.
And Yates has skyrocketed in the last few main event drafts. Yeah, I would imagine. Skyrocketed.
And probably rightfully so. Yeah. Though there was the whole tweet from Passan that was talking about the possibility or his almost expectation. I don't want to put words in his mouth. He didn't say that, but he made it sound like that Reed Detmers could end up with the most saves in Anaheim from out of everybody when the season's all said and done.
And I forget, what's Ben Joyce's injury? Do we expect him back anytime soon?
I think he's out for a little bit, but that's a good question. Unlikely, definitely starting it on the IL, and it is shoulder surgery, so in last year. So he's just not
ready. I wouldn't go overboard on Yates, but I would be fairly confident he's going to have the job for at least a couple months.
But I am more interested in Detmers in drafts that I might still have, just because it's like one of those players, like if he fails at one job, he probably
got the other
job that's also valuable, especially at that point in your draft. You're fine drafting almost either one, a closer or, a spec starter. All right. Well, this closes us out then, Kevin, to the wild card section, which was what we talked about. I'm going to throw out a name that I don't think is not something that we were considering, but I'm wondering, and we've talked about him in the past, Anthony Volpe, 28% rostered. He's another one like a Carlos Rodon teammate. Where if nobody picks them up in Fab and no one drafted them in your league, you won't be able to pick him up until he makes his debut later on this season. So, like, is Anthony Volpe somebody worth throwing a couple dollars on and stashing him for a week or two and then dropping him back in, or stashing him if you don't have that stash spot yet?
I would hope I don't have to drop him, but I think any league I'm in that he's available and I have anybody that I can drop, I'm putting a bid down on Volpe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's readily available everywhere. So, I mean,
we were talking about drafting him, a few weeks ago. So the early leagues, and then I was a little overexcited about some of the reports and thought we might see him a little earlier. Doesn't sound like that was the case. Makes perfect sense. They want to wait a little bit, and then they're not even going to allow him to attempt to dive on that shoulder until April. But as soon as he passes that test, he's in. So
that's the problem is there's only one way to pass that test, and that's actually dive on the shoulder and see what happens.
Yes, exactly. So any league he's available, if I have somebody I can drop, I'm putting a bid on. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Anybody else that kind of fits this.
And then just hoping he improves that batting average, because we know he's a 2020 guy. We just need some batting average out of him. He's young enough to do it.
He's become a stash, but River Ryan is somebody I really like. He's become a stash because the Dodgers also sent him down officially. So somebody that I'm just keeping an eye on. I will only be able to keep an eye on him if I bid on him, though, this week in a lot of my leagues where he wasn't drafted. Again, that's the theme here. But any of those guys that did not make the roster, you want to keep an eye on them to make sure that they are going to be available. Somebody who did make the roster that might have been considered a stash if he wasn't going to is Rhett Lauder. Did make the opening rotation for the Reds. I'm going to that opening weekend. I'm curious to know
who I'm going to
get. I'm going because the Red Sox play in Cincinnati the first weekend of the season. So I'm going to the Sunday game. The Sunday game, the Red Sox have already announced their rotation for the first like six games, and it's Crochet. Oh geez, I'm blinking. Why am I blinking?
And probably against Craig, like Lodolo or somebody. Gray.
Well, for the on the Red Sox side, it's Crochet, Gray, TBD as their third. Right? They're gonna
hold. Oh, I thought you were saying it was Crochet on Sunday.
No. But I'm like, how do I go to the third game of the season and I get TBD? They're holding Ranger Suarez for the fourth game in the next series, and then Crochet is going to play again on that next round. But
gotcha.
Like in Bayo as well. But I'm like, who am I going to get for TBD? I think a lot of people are thinking it's going to be either Oviedo or possibly Connelly Early actually, you know, gets the call type of thing.
If we get that news before Sunday, that's definitely you're getting that one start out of them for a good team, right? That's a definite pickup. Hopefully we get news on that. We have about 48 hours here. And that would definitely be somebody I'd be interested in. As we were talking, you know, some non-closing relievers for ratios, somebody like that, if you want to go lean more towards the chasing wins side of it and grab the Red Sox pitcher on Sunday, absolutely.
Yeah, as long as you get the news before, you know, your bids go on Sunday night. But you're not going to be able to spec on Early. He's pretty much drafted everywhere. But Johan Oviedo, only 50% rostered in those 12 teamers. So he'd be more readily available. So if you want to take a spec, here's the thing is if Oviedo, he's not going to, I don't think Oviedo gets sent down. So even if he doesn't start that game on Sunday, he probably gets you some innings regardless as well. So you have that option. Braxton Garrett was also the one was also sent down by Miami, if I'm remembering the correct Garrett. Zebby Matthews also sent down by the Twins as well. Speculating that Mick Abel makes that rotation or at least makes the opening roster. Yeah, and then as Nick Pollock tweeted out saying that Jansen Junk should probably be the number five. In Miami. So you have options there as well. Junk not going to get any innings, of course, in that first series just because he's the number five. But just know that Braxton Garrett's not going to be your option either. And I'm not sure you want to be stashing him where you did. So you might see a lot of drops of Braxton Garrett in your first week, first weekend of Fab as well. So, anybody else, Kevin, that kind of comes to mind that either, you know, was dropped down by their team? Looks like Ryan Weathers is probably going to make that rotation after all, even after a slight injury scare for the Yankees. I was just saying, of course, Braxton Garrett got sent down. Zebby Matthews got sent down by the Twins. Anybody else that kind of fits into this category that you're keeping an eye on?
No, I think unless I'm forgetting somebody, and I don't think I am, I'd rather go towards our ratio reliever guys if I can't get like a Lauer or or one of those guys. Just because. Yes, you make the amazing point every season. The ratio categories, the competitors ahead of you can come back to you. Sure. At the same time, if we don't set a good foundation, it makes it really hard to improve our ratios. So I don't want to go too deep here this early. I stream guys all season long. I stream pitchers a lot of people would vomit at the, even the thought of picking up, based on their matchups. But hopefully you've drafted so that you don't have to do that this early.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Weirdest wild card question. Is there any reason to do this whole idea where you pull somebody up now and then just to drop them on somebody like Lucas Giolito, who, you know, again, he'll fit into this category. He doesn't have a team, so you won't be able to bid on him until he finds one, though it doesn't seem like there's been a whole lot of interest in that.
Right. That's what I was going to say. You said somebody like him was the only reason that makes this intriguing, because it sounds like nobody's interested in Giolito, but someone like him, sure. If you didn't draft a couple of stashes, even if you did one stash, right, you're dropping this guy anyway. Mm-hmm. So there's some room here, but yeah, absolutely. If even a veteran player, to your point, that's the point you're making, even a veteran player in NFBC formats, this is something you have to take into consideration. Do you want that player to be available to be picked up before he is added to the major league roster? And you got to put him in that notebook, and then you really have to stay on top of it, or you did someone else in your league a favor.
Exactly.
That's the hard part.
Yep. Because this is like a, you know, a partial stash, if you will.
Yes,
it's like you're just making him available. And so you can save some bucks. You can save some money, because then you can be like, all right, I'm going to try to get in on them a week early, 2 weeks early even. So there's always going to be a level of stash that you're going to have to do to keep this guy. Because if you wait too long, just everybody realizes it. And then there's still going to be a bidding frenzy anyway. So you're either saving money and you're stashing a little bit, or you're paying full freight anyway. So you got to know who you are as a player and what you're willing to do. All right. Well, good luck to everybody on their final drafts of the season and your first week of Fab. Don't forget, it actually happens. And we'll be here week in, week out to go through our standard Fab strategies, category by category. But Kevin, as you prepare for your main event and your Bubba in the Bloom, that's a live draft too. That's super fun. That's a live listener league live draft.
Yeah, 12-teamer standalone league. So even in standalone leagues, I'm not going to go in thinking I can punt a category. But as the draft goes on, if things are looking that way, it is something for those drafting those home league drafts this weekend. It in a standalone league, as the draft goes along, if you realize that it's going to be very difficult to really make up enough ground in a category, embrace it. Don't fight it. Just embrace it. Punt it. And because if you don't, you're not taking the advantage of being able to bolster your other categories, which you can do if you're just forgetting about that. Mm-hmm. At the same time, don't forget about it completely. Get a few. Right. I wouldn't completely punt saves. Right. Grab one of the Milwaukee guys. If you're going to punt saves, you're going to get a handful from either one of them. Even if the other guy gets the majority, grab somebody so you don't have a zero, gets you 3 or 4 points in that category. But embrace it. Don't fight it. Once you get several rounds into a draft when it's a standalone, don't go into a draft planning on punting, in my opinion. But if it starts to work out that way,
pivot.
Bolster, make the rest of your team that much better. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. In order to punt a category, you have to be the best at everything else. Ultimately.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right.
And that's not quite if you don't take a zero, you know. You can if you finish eighth and get 5 points in a 12-team league, that can be huge. So, but Yeah, I think that's a great point for a lot of people drafting their home leagues this weekend. Opening day, Adam. It's less than a week away.
By the time you're listening to this, it's 4 days away.
Yeah, three for the one game. We have a game Wednesday night. Yes. Yeah.
Math is hard.
And we didn't bring this up, Adam, but I have to before we go. How much fun did you have watching the World Baseball Classic? That's the most fun I've had watching baseball when it wasn't October in my entire life.
I mean, except for the way that the U.S. Dominican game ended. Besides that one pitch,
yes, and
that one call.
That was horrible. But yes. But I was, before I came to Vegas, I went to visit my mom in Omaha, and she's remarried since I left home. So I don't know my mom's husband that well. And for four nights in a row, we watched every single pitch of a baseball game and had a blast.
That's great.
It was amazing.
Man, I used to live in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. So I went to the 2013 World Baseball Classic, the semifinal game, because it was at then AT&T Park, now Oracle, in San Francisco. Dude, it's just a completely different, it's just a completely different feeling, the game, the atmosphere, everything.
Yeah.
In the stadium, unfortunately, that was early on in the existence of the WBC. I think it was like the second or third tournament that had happened. And so it wasn't a sold out stadium, which was disappointing, but
yeah,
like everybody who was there was just, it was just a blast. It was so much fun.
I kept saying that it was an amazing time, having so much fun watching baseball in March. But the more I thought about it, I don't think I've had this much fun watching baseball when it wasn't October.
Right.
It was amazing. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's nice that they can coexist with spring training without pulling players out during the regular season. Me personally, I'm like, it'd almost be nicer if it was in February, just so we could get a true spring training for everybody. But I mean, the way that they compete and the way that they work it out, it seems as though most of the players not only have a blast, but they also they get their reps in, right? They get what they need to do.
They went in depth on this a couple of weeks ago on a Race and Barrels episode when Britt Giroli was back after she'd been covering the Olympics, and she brought up great points. It's the major league owners have given zero consideration to taking a longer break in the middle of the season, but if they would consider that, the World Baseball Classic could even get that much better, because
it's true.
Starting pitchers would be stretched out, ready to go, and let them really fire. And that would make, I feel like every country except the United States did that to the extent they could get away with it without the major league teams pulling the players back.
Yeah.
But I think it could be even better.
I mean,
like hockey, but major league owners haven't even considered that thus far.
I mean, the NBA is doing something like that recently with that whole cup thing. I mean, those are still regular season games. They still count. It's still part of their season.
Yeah.
But it's still like this little mini tournament that they do in the middle of the season. It's kind of the same thing. Just let them do that. All right. Well, that is going to do it. I got to get up early and fly to Boston. You got to get up early and
you have a great time.
Kill your draft.
You have a great time having your Dynasty League winter meetings.
That's
so much fun.
Everybody needs one of these, like your home league, your whatever league that where you're, I mean, we've been doing this. This will be the 26th season of this league. Started in 2001.
You been in it the entire time?
I have. I was an original six. We started in a six team league. That's as embarrassing as that sounds. But we only had six teams in the first season. We went up to eight and then 12. We've been a 12 team league pretty much the entire time. Mostly like the core of the group has been in the league for the last over a decade, with like a few exceptions. So it's a pretty tight knit group. So shout out to the ACC, the EHCC, out in mostly in Boston, but we've got players in California, down in Nashville.
Is that the league that every team has their own Twitter page?
Yeah, most of them do. The ones that try to be active. You get extra minor league picks.
And that's my point. Yeah. Have fun this weekend and all week. We got opening day coming up and our biggest drafts and meetings to have a blast. Yeah.
Just center yourself around baseball. That's all you need to do. All right. Well, with all that and everything else, that's going to do it for episode 247 of On the Wire. I am Adam Howe on behalf of Kevin Hastin. Thanks for listening. And we bid you